Fife fans, and welcome to Fife's number one podcast called Fife Club. That's right, it's Fife Club. The first rule of Fife Club, as always, is please
talk
about
what the heck?
Fife Club.
Yeah.
There you go.
I hate him, don't you?
Fucking...
Yeah,
please talk about Fife Club. Yeah, let your friends know about us, let your enemies know about us, and let your gran know about us.
Well, apparently we've got acapellas now, so...
Your gran knows about me already.
My gran's dead.
My gran's dead too.
Well, she's dead.
Well, this is even bleaker than the start of last week's podcast.
My grans don't even like the podcast. So might move the acapella.
We'll encourage her into it.
Yeah. Possibly, yeah.
And, well, we could send Jamie round. We've had some solid listener numbers last week, and we're chuffed to see that people still are enjoying whatever this thing is, and new listeners coming in and catching up too. It's all great to see. We'd also like to say thanks to everyone that has got in contact with us over the last week, and to Phil again for providing us with more spiffing visual content.
It's a total dick.
Hilarious fucking content.
It's a dick.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Keep up the good work.
He's dead to me, that guy.
Well, he's our new best friend. Also, we'd love to say thanks for all the sort of related and local stuff that you guys are sharing with us as well. It is really good to see, and kind of helps us move with topics and things like that as well. And
were you going to say help with research? Because I think research is really not in our wheelhouse.
It's really not. Helps us think about topics.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is that time where I introduce the reprobates that I have here with me today. And that's myself, Kutch, of course. So, he's got a frown. He's from the town. And his father's pretty sound. Is Jamie Brown? Is Jamie Brown? Is Jamie Brown? Is Jamie Brown? It's Jamie.
Hello.
Your dad is pretty sound, actually.
He is. I'm not. He is.
He is possibly my third favourite. No, he's my second favourite of the Brown family.
As our friend Kyle likes to say, never a friend with Jamie Brown.
Never. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Who's the first favourite?
I'm not getting into that.
My scar.
We can just cut that singing bit out.
Yeah, no, you're fine. Because ole, 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 ole. We won't deceive. His name ain't Steve. Ole, 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 ole. We're not naive. He needs a weave. Marky, 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 Mark. It's Mark.
Wow. That's good. I'm quitting. This is it. This is the last one. This is the bit where I just like storm off.
Might join you.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go. Let's have it.
We set the bar pretty high. I think we should just bow out now. Right?
No, I think finally.
By the way, once I get a job, you'll be fucking jealous of me. Let me tell you that right now. Oh, a thicket of hair will be back. You'll be like, who is that guy? No expensive beaker style comb overs for me. Sorry.
I'll never be jealous of a weave, mate.
Maybe I'll just pin you down, shave your pus, and take some of the hair off that, mate. Yeah.
It's too funny, mate. He's only shaved twice in his life.
Yeah,
it's true. Too soft, a bird.
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Not really. Who are you?
I'm Beatty. Hi.
Oh, all right. Okay. Sorry, I didn't recognise you there, pal.
Just because I got rid of the comb over.
I did wonder where Phoenix Wright had gone to.
Ironically, your introductions all kind of have a sort of football theme about it.
This week?
Yeah, very much.
I kind of thought I'd go for that.
You are a big football fan.
I love him.
Kicking the old ball around.
Go for the old yob demographic.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, love him.
But yeah, so that's the crew tonight.
So we start with some football banter. How is the football? What's happening in the football?
I would be delighted to have a section of football, guys. It would actually make my day.
How is the
Borough are going down?
The Borough are going down, sadly.
What about that team, eh?
big talk in the northeast, actually. Actually, genuinely quite topical. West Ham and Newcastle are both being investigated for tax evasion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there was some arrests there. Yeah. So that makes them...
Was there not somebody also arrested up here for nonsense?
Oh, yeah. There was a nonsense inquiry with the SFA. It seems like people are suggesting that they brush that under the carpet, which is obviously a conspiracy in favour of Celtic. It just depends, because everything's a conspiracy up here, isn't it?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Especially with the old firm.
Yeah. Two cheeks.
And that's the football section.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
So, what have we been reading, watching, playing this week?
Ma!
Miller! Danny Latimer!
Danny Latimer's dead, Miller! Miller!
Miller!
You're useless, Miller!
Danny Latimer's dead, Miller! What use are you, Miller? I've been watching, rewatching Predator.
Sorry, I thought we'd become an audio play for a minute.
Do you want some candy, Miller?
I did actually like how Predator investigated that murder in the southwest of England. Southwest. Yeah, lovely. Yeah,
Linda really... Coleman and Predator.
Yes,
Predator's involved. It just Predator's involved. It just like gives credence to my theory that it's actually a Doctor Who spin-off.
It could well be. It could well be
for fans. He's used a fob watch and doesn't know he's a doctor anymore. He's investigating a murder.
Yeah.
Yes, that's good. I've still not seen it, so don't ruin it for me.
Should we just tell you who does every single crime of every single season?
Yeah, thanks. No, yeah, let's not.
All right, okay.
I'd like to enjoy it one day.
I've been watching Broadchurch as well, as you kind of brought it up so tacitly there, Beaker. I thought it was very enjoyable.
It wasn't
kind of
Lenny Henry.
Nice.
It was almost Lenny Henry, but
yeah.
You look at the series and it's episode 6. Oh, it's not Lenny Henry. I've seen three series so far.
I was trying to stop that happening. Gosh. I really tried to reel that back in. But I would say Lenny Henry's actually a fine straight actor, though. Yeah, I thought he was really good.
A few things
there was a couple of comedians. You had was it Ian Higgins?
Yeah, Charlie Higson.
Charlie Higson. Yeah, from
The Fast Show.
Yeah. He's got the staple of The Fast Show. Then Lenny Henry. That's cool. Generally good actors.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of comedians tend to be pretty good actors when you see them. I say that, but I can't think of any others now offhand. But
Robin Williams was
excellent.
Jim Carrey as well when he does Straight Away.
Yeah. I hate Jim Carrey.
He's not done many,
even
but when
in
he does.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
He's the only time I've ever been able to take Jim Carrey.
The one when he...
When he's gay.
No, that's awful. I don't
know. Oh, I like that film.
Nah. Actually, I'm thinking of the Adam Sandler film.
Punch Drunk Love.
No.
He's really good in that. That's maybe
Adam Sandler.
It's the only one where he plays this... he does it completely straight, and he's actually pretty good.
Is it I Pronounce You Chuck and Larry?
That's the one.
Oh, right. Oh, no, not that. God, no, the one where he's...
The one with Ewan McGregor.
Yeah,
totally. No, he owns he has like amnesia, and he turns up in a village and he runs a cinema.
Oh.
It's during like Cold War period, during the McCarthy trials.
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Nope. I can't remember what it's called. It's a really good film. Really good film. But I'll try and remember the title of it at some point.
That would be good. Yeah. Any other comedians are.
I believe that was the last series of Broadchurch.
I think that's done with it.
Oh, that's good. Well, that means if I do sit and go through it.
I thought they were pushing
Chris Chibnall's off to do Doctor Who.
I thought they were pushing it with Series 2. But Series 2 turned out to be quite good, and Series 3 was also quite good as well.
I disagree with that. Really? I thought Series 2 was dreadful, but I have been challenged on that by others. It's a not popular opinion. I got really bored of it. I think because they kind of retread a lot of the same steps, but it goes from murder investigation to trial, like kind of sort of court-type thriller in the second one as well. And I think for that reason, I lost interest. Not that like the performances and things like that were really good. I've forgotten the actress who's the superstar actress who plays the trial barrister, who's amazing in it. That's really annoying me. But
we're so good with names.
Oh no, jeez, we're off to a cracking start here, guys.
Series 2. I like Series 2. It's kind of into the whole backstory of why David Tennant's character. I can't remember his name in the series. I've just watched the whole series. I can't remember his name.
Alex Hardy.
Hardy. Hardy's character and how he split up with his wife. And came to Broadchurch, and that was quite interesting as well. But yeah, it kind of felt like they were just like, oh, we've still got this little bit of story we could dig up from the first series, so let's use that. But Series 3 was good as well.
I think closing it at Series 3 as well is quite a sensible thing for it to do, because otherwise you get into that sort of Midsummer Murders thing where you've got a village of 40 people and they're quite literally all taking axes to each other. Yeah.
It's always difficult with a sort of like, because it's essentially a long form procedural cop drama, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
And I think it's always difficult with that, because you either go down one of two routes and you go into your weekly mysteries, or you draw it out.
I think 3, just leave it at 3. Yeah. And it was a perfect little trilogy. Cool. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was Charlotte Rampling was the actress who plays the QC. She's the one that plays Jocelyn Knight in the second series. She's excellent. She's worth watching in absolutely anything. But I would say the other thing about
Broadchurch.
it's impossible not to, though.
I think it's like audio cues to pay attention to. Like, you can't drift off on your phone and you can only get that. Miller! It's like, sorry, right? I was drifting off there.
Danny Latimer's dead!
Well, but just, I just want
spoiler for you.
for the first episode. Yeah. No, I would say the one who I think, like Andrew Buchan, who plays Mark Latimer in this third series of Broadchurch, is absolutely brilliant. That he kind of steals the whole show for me.
You totally feel like he's paying.
Yeah, absolutely.
It does get a bit annoying though, like he's kind of sulking, I think.
Yeah.
But you can understand why. Yeah. Spoiler for episode one of series one, right there.
That's what you boys did.
The first 10 minutes,
Brown Breed to fuck.
I don't think I'll watch it anymore.
No, it's pretty depressing. The finale of series one.
Beaker's riffing. Yeah. So I'll throw another cop drama in that I've been watching. So I've been watching two crime-based things this week.
Uh-huh.
Been watching In the Line of Duty, which is Martin Compson wears waistcoats and everyone runs around a lot and everyone stabs each other in the back and is a secret and is like selling police secrets to everybody else and everyone's a baddie and stuff. It's awesome. Actually like, it's kind of, it's shite, but it's quite watchable shite, if you know what I mean. And Martin Compton's good in everything
he does as well.
Actually, speaking of him, did any of you guys see the film he did with Robert Downey Jr.? A Guide to Something About Saints.
No. Which is odd because I think I've seen a lot of his films.
But it is very good. I think the first time we ever kind of really see Martin Compton is in Sweet 16. Where he's absolutely brilliant.
He's really good in that, yeah.
But I think this movie with Robert Downey Jr., which I'm definitely not just looking up. A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
Ah.
It's a really kind of interesting, like, New York-based, like, friendship kind of drama thing. I think it's actually really good, really well done.
Cool.
And it's weird to see Martin Compton, who you think of as, like, a Scottish Ned in a lot of the things he does, turning up in this thing and doing a pretty passable American accent. His Cockney accent in The Line of Duty is pretty good as well. But the other thing I've been watching, which I think is superb, and I'd recommend to anyone, is the TV series of Gomorrah, which was the Gomorrah crime syndicates in Naples, and it's all set in like the sort of the ghettos in Naples and things like that. Who controls particular corners,
right?
It's like, it's got all that kind of classic things of everybody, like, nobody being able to trust each other, lots of kind of violence and things like that, but actually it does a really cracking job of
it was surprising when you watch the two series how it paints like the very unpretty side of Naples.
Naples
is like that I like Naples when I went there, but it's like pretty rough.
There's no scenes of like nice scenery or touristy stuff.
There's not much of it.
They're really dirty kind of ghetto. Yeah, the ghettos and I absolutely loved it. It's based on a book, isn't it?
Pretty sure. I think the original movie was based on a book, and then I think that they had such, it was kind of a breakout kind of foreign language film success with the first one, that I think that they then decided to set a series. I don't know if that's entirely true. It might be a full book series for all I know, but I thought that's the way it worked.
There is a series of books, but I think the second series of Gomorrah is just based on its own right. I think they probably got the writer in to help write it, and it's based on the same characters. But yeah, I absolutely loved it.
It's kind of pretty fluid in terms of the characters that you follow and things like that. You do kind of develop a relationship quite quickly with some of the characters, although there's some of the shiftiest geezers. It kind of reminded me of the French film La Haine, which was in, I think it was early 90s, which was really good. Similar kind of thing, banlieues, drug dealers, although absolutely banging French hip hop soundtrack, which is quite often to be heard in my car.
The people are playing it out their windows.
Yeah,
the speakers out their window. Yeah,
you've never seen The Wire, Pimmin. You should.
And I've never watched The Wire. The Wire is The Wire. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To me, it sounds like The Wire is like the Baltimore version of this, or they're the foreign language
version of The Wire. Your description of it just makes me think of The Wire.
It's like the dirty parts of Baltimore. And I think The Wire is even better now because the technology using The Wire is so old now. Like big, huge CRT monitors, and they don't have mobiles and things like that because it's that old now. I suppose it gets better with age, actually.
They don't even have computers in the first season. Regular cops are still doing stuff on typewriters. Because the city can't afford to run.
Surveillance is like old and VHS. Because
it was sort of like just turn of the 1999. Like the late 90s, wasn't it?
I think the only kind of criticism I'd have of Gomorrah is the same criticism I have of a lot of like crime series, where you particularly Sons of Anarchy. Mm-hmm. Like, this was my, like, I actually quite enjoyed the first couple of series of Sons of Anarchy. I thought it was kind of interesting. But there gets a point when you realize that this group of people, and both Gamora and Sons of Anarchy, where you realize that these people are fucking terrible at crime. And it's like, quite literally, you should just give up committing crime because you're terrible. Because
you can't do it.
As far as I can see, basically, you've not committed one successful crime during the whole of the time that I've watched this. For example, like, Sons of Anarchy annoyed me more than anything else because I watched it and I suddenly thought, a bit Dragon's Den, I was watching it thinking, you guys seem to have a pretty successful motorbike repair company sorted out there. your mechanic garage thing seems to be doing a roaring trade in really fancy motorcycles. Give up the crime. Like, you're shit at it. You seem to be good at fixing nice bicycles. This is great.
That's where your money is, yeah.
What about you, lads? Have you been playing or reading?
I've been reading Ian Rankin's last book, Devil May Care. Is it Devil May Care? I think that's it.
Are you reading that?
It's another Rebus book, and it's really good. I mean, it's Ian Rankin and Rebus. The two just go together really well. Rebus is sort of now retired, but won't give up a case, and it's all about him still bothering all his contacts, Siobhan Clark, his old underling, and that he manages to get himself woven into another case, and he seems to be sort of integral to the whole thing because he has knowledge, and the police force is losing this sort of like skill set of old cops who sort of went on their gut.
Yeah, he's got a gut feeling about it. Yeah. He knows the guy. He looked into the guy's soul.
There's a whole chunk about
that's
how
inadmissible evidence happens.
they talk about that's that as well. They talk about sort of like how he gets results, but it's not always necessarily the right way, and that there's a reason why the modern police force is how it is. Mm-hmm. But it also picks up with another character that he sort of started when he stopped writing the Rebus books first time around.
Is that Fox?
Malcolm Fox. So he wrote two books on him. And in the last four books, he's been bringing Fox more and more into the circle, and now he's sort of like part of the team, essentially. And it's quite good because I do reckon he's probably going to kill Rebus off soon.
Because Rebus can't have much longer to live.
Yeah, well, he's like, one of the things through this is that he's got dodgy lungs, and there's a shadow, and you can sort of see the slow breakdown. He's left the police, the years of drinking, and everything's catching up with him.
I was going to say I don't know much about Rebus, but is drinking involved?
Yeah,
it seems like such a cliche.
It's a cliche, but he's one of the original cliches. He's one of the original troubled cops. Before him there was Jack Laidlaw, William McIlvaney,
I think that might be the best three crime books I've ever read.
Absolutely brilliant.
Undeniably brilliant.
Just saying about Troubled Cops and Alcohol, it's like in Touch of Cloth, where I can't remember the actor's name, but he's John Hannah, but he's sleeping in his car. But he has an optic in his car with like whiskey. It's amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, again, there's a link with that, is that he was the first person to play Rebus on TV.
Yeah. So. There was a TV show had Kevin Bacon in it as a retired policeman or a kind of bent policeman.
Was that not The Following?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, in the first episode. Yeah.
I didn't like that.
There was a whole scene with him having a drink, and I just like, oh, I didn't watch any anymore, but I actually switched off after that.
I think Touch of Cloth ruined a lot of that for me. It ruined anything new that comes along, because
This was before Touch of Cloth, and I was just kind of like, was that
not around about the same time? Because I do remember catching some of The Following.
Yeah.
And it just felt like Cloth. There was something else that I watched, and it was Cloth note for note. But the thing with Touch of Cloth was Charlie Brooker had said that he drove himself mental watching just continual procedural cop shows. And took down every, and it was beat for beat that they all followed the same pattern. Mm-hmm. And that's why it works as such a good parody.
Mm-hmm. I think on Beaker's point, I kind of agree with you. Like, sometimes when I'm watching a film or something like that, mm-hmm. and you're watching the guy like swigging from a bottle of Jack Daniels or something like that, and you're like, oh, for God's sake.
Or
like,
a clear bottle from his desk.
Actually, do you know, that was the one that actually Logan?
Yeah, Logan. Yeah.
Logan, I think.
Mind you saying,
I had exactly that same feeling with Logan. It was like, yes, he's unhappy, but there he is, like, necking the bottle. And you're like, sometimes you don't need to show Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, like you don't need to like elaborate the point.
Yeah.
Like
maybe a couple of bottles lying about. And
exactly.
It just feels like a cheap, easy visual tactic. Mm. So you immediately kind of feel for that character, and that just puts me off straight away.
Mm. I think it has it's got its right place. Like you've got your super smart types, mm-hmm. like your Sherlock Holmes or kind of that archetype of the guy who could solve everything because he's a genius. But then you also have to have the sort of slightly troubled, damaged ones where the division between good and evil
is very much down the line. Again, this book deals with that a lot as well because it's his old nemesis, Cafferty. Again, it goes into how he's now an old man and he's losing his control over Edinburgh. He kind of already has, but mm-hmm. it's about how he survives and that the two of them have become almost like drinking buddies mm-hmm. but still don't trust one another, still essentially mortal enemies, but they're just two sides of the same coin. And it's a really good book. It's interesting because I've read them from the start and from when I was quite sort of young teens as well, to have grown up with the character and to see that character grow old as well along with Ian Rankin. Mm. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff he writes with Rebus, he's putting a lot of himself into it.
I think what he's seen. Yeah, I think there's a lot of like observation, character study kind of thing goes into that.
And it's always been an interesting series and just enjoyable. Like the characters are, they tend to be quite fun. There's a lot of black humour in it, being cops as well. It's a good series of books.
Did you ever read them?
No.
Because ironically, I've never read the Rebus series. Mm. I've read Rankin's books. I've read other ones, but I've not read those ones. I kind of at the same time was reading Chris Brookmyre.
I've not read Chris Brookmyre, but that's somebody that I would like to read a bit more of at some point. But that's what I've mostly been reading this week. James, what about you?
I started reading a book about a long time ago, which was Inventing the Future by Nick Snark and someone else. And it's basically about political demands for what to do with automation, basic income, that sort of thing. Oh, automation should be owned by collectors of people, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. We're almost accelerationists, but interesting.
That sounds incredibly boring.
It will be to most people. I think it's amazing.
To the layman.
I think it's amazing.
I think that sounds interesting.
To me, it sounds like the sort of thing I would love to have crib notes on because I would probably not wade through. But
well, that's the thing. A lot of people are referring to it. So I bought it when it first came out because I could see that coming, and now everybody's referring to it. I'm like, I'm gonna have to read it now.
I had the same like Piketty.
Yes,
like, I considered that. Took one look at it and went, meh, crib notes.
Yeah, yeah. I think I read about half of it, and then I've never finished it. But it's like a Capital Volume 3.
Yeah,
no one's read Volume 3. I don't believe you if you say not even Mark's scholars have read Volume 3. We're lying.
Having, done the full politics degree in political theory and things like that, actually, most of these enormous books basically summarized down to a series of about 10 bullet points anyway at any given time. I know the lazy man's approach to doing it, but like a lot of the time you read the whole and that really is all you kind of need is general concepts and how to work from there. But automation's truly amazingly interesting.
Yeah. I've also been watching, did I talk about this last week? Frontier with Jason Momoa.
I think you talked to me about it.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's pros. It's basically what says in 10, it's a frontier thing in Canada. So you've got all the different groups there vying for control of the pelt trade. Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa, who of Game of Thrones or Stargate Atlantis fame,
for the old school,
was a sort of half Native American, half Irish guy, and then you've got the British, the Hudson Bay Company, and you've got Scottish people there, and you've got French Canadian people or French people there, and it's good. I wish it had the
Stargate.
That'd be good. Stargate would make it better.
Khaleesi?
I wish it had the budget that Taboo had because very similar ideas. It's all about control of trade in North America.
That just reminds me of Taboo.
Well, I think it's actually happens a lot. Studios hear what other studios are working on, they make something similar. Mm-hmm. But I actually think it's meant to be a, what's the series Kirsty loves?
Outlander.
I think it's meant to be an Outlander thing.
Like, loves is...
Yeah, underselling.
No, the TV series.
Oh, the TV series, no, she hates the series.
Well, not hates, but has issues with.
Yeah. But I think it was meant to kill that originally. But it's good. So yeah, recommend that.
It also kind of reminds me of Lost Kingdom. I don't know if any of you guys have been watching that.
I haven't seen that.
That is quite, it's like Danes in the north of England and the kind of like Saxon wars and things like between like various areas and things like that. Some of the...
Oh no, I watched like the last episode of that.
Some of the hokiest accents I've seen in a long time. Uhtred Ragnarsson! I am Uhtred of Bidenbaum. And you're like, honestly, some of it is kind of like, some of it's kind of ridiculous, but also it's actually really fucking fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I kind of put it in the same thing as in Line of Duty. It's shite, but I'm going to watch it. And I was kind of stuck with
it. It's that sort of like stuff that's a bit mindless.
Yeah, you're totally. Not
necessarily having to think about.
So, Penman's PlayStation Lite is on. So, what have you been playing, Mark?
I've been watching Gamora.
Netflix.
Yeah, he's been playing Netflix.
Yeah, I think I've nearly completed Netflix now. Seriously, I'm quite close.
Your ongoing challenge.
My ongoing challenge. Yeah.
Does the PlayStation give you achievements for Netflix? Xbox does.
Does it?
Oh, 0 point trophies.
Aye. For every 5 hours, watch 10 hours, watch five episodes of the same.
I knew that Netflix curates what it shows you free to watch, but I thought only did that with some stuff and then gave you basically everything else in other sections. Mm-hmm. But when I look at my one, I've got my own version of Xbox and from the TV and living room, my little sister's one's logged in. It's completely different.
Totally different, yeah.
There's maybe about 30% crossover, you know.
Yeah, like I've got the one account, but I've got my one and then there's Kirsty's one. Mm. And then my mum and dad have got one as well. And if I go in and have a look, they're just so completely different, the recommendations.
It gets annoyed as well, because there's things that I watch mainly on the TV.
Uh-huh.
On the other account, it's like, this thing's a 98% match. Why haven't you watched it yet? And it's like, I've watched it already. Just fucking up your statistics by watching it on another account.
I just don't understand why it thinks that I love Dave Chappelle. It's like constantly trying to get me to watch Dave Chappelle.
Is that not just because they're trying to punt that?
I don't know. Can I suggest something that I have tried to watch? And I, you know, in the way that we all, sort of like all of you were saying, Rick and Morty's really good.
Yeah.
We all start watching Rick and Morty and it's really fantastic.
Yeah.
Something lots of people told me to watch and I watched it and I think it's absolutely pish. Bob's Burgers.
Oh, fuck off.
I like Bob's Burgers.
I've never watched it properly, so...
Am I out here on my own?
I've never watched it.
You know what? It takes a while.
Yeah,
I didn't like it.
The first couple of times I kind of caught it, I was just like, nut off. And then I think Kirsty started watching it. And actually, yeah, I quite like it. My problem with it, though, is that it's Archer.
I think it's Archer voices.
Yeah, but it's Archer's voice, and I find it difficult to separate that.
Yeah.
Like, his voice doesn't work for me as Bob, so that's...
But that's also why it's funny when he goes back to work at a burger joint.
Yeah, but then, in Archer, that works. But yeah, I do have a problem.
I just love
with
it.
That.
Kirsten Schaal.
She's really good.
Yeah.
She
playing Louise, the youngest daughter.
Who's the one element of it, which is kind of, which is definitely the funnier element of it.
Uh-huh.
But it's kind of underplayed comedy. And like, and I just don't know if it's like so underplayed that I'm just.
Maybe try giving it a.
I'll give it a college try.
Maybe try a few later seasons.
See, I said that about Always Sunny.
Well, I was just going to say,
I didn't like it. I think I was in the wrong mood, and I went back and watched it recently, and I actually really like it. Now,
yeah,
so.
Because that was my thing with Always Sunny was I watched a couple because I knew you had watched it and Beatty had watched it. A few folk had watched it, and. Watched a couple of episodes and was really unsure about it and kind of didn't really get it.
Yeah.
But then I think probably about fifth or sixth episode into the first series, a joke that had been running from the start paid off.
Yeah.
And it was that was the moment where it was like,
Do you looking like a little bird?
Yeah. But there was something that just paid off in one go, and it was like, I'm now in.
I just love Danny DeVito in it. Danny DeVito, always dribbling, and sweaty, and getting filthy, and I love it.
He properly brings anarchy.
Yeah.
But I think your thing as well, watching the first couple of episodes of It's Always Sunny, I just was not convinced at all.
No,
I watched it and I was like, is this? I couldn't work out who the target of it was.
That's what I thought.
I think that was it. And it was like, are they serious? Are they being serious and they think this is funny?
Well, that's what I felt about like Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I put in the same categories Girls, which I don't like. It's like Alan Partridge, but it's not, you're not meant to think you're not meant to think they're knobs necessarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Whereas the whole point of Alan Partridge is a massive knob, but he doesn't realize he is.
Yeah.
And that's, it's the same thing.
And that's what I worried was going on with all the time. But Always Sunny's better.
But they're meant to be arseholes.
Oh, they're horrible people.
They're meant
yeah.
to be just absolutely vile people. And like I say, I think in the end, it's really about the downfall of Charlie.
Yeah, exactly. Charlie is the everyman.
Yeah.
He's like the downtrodden everyman who could have been something if it wasn't for hanging around with total arseholes.
Yeah,
he has been in hummingbirds all day, though.
I don't get
later season.
Yeah. He does this, it's like a leg exercise, but he's tense up his like leg and his calves or something, like it was the hummingbirds. And that's why he's so toned. The series when Matt gets fat as well was pretty good.
Yeah, well, I didn't understand that at first, because that was across like two or three seasons. And then I sat and read it, because it was never really explained. And it was about, he did it because at that point in all the sitcoms, everybody was getting thin. And it was all about how there were like bigger actors and actresses were losing a lot of weight as the series went on. So he just decided, I'm gonna deconstruct that and just get fat and not have it explained.
Yeah,
it's like start of season five.
Guys, I've been doing that for years.
Wow. I didn't realise this was a sitcom.
I'm a horrific person. I mean, I'm doing all the boxes here. Come
you
on.
Do love martial arts. He loves martial arts.
Every time we go to his house, he does give me a visual pat down.
Yeah.
Yeah. An optical pat down.
An outdoor search.
Clear for passage.
Oh, dear. Are we all happy to move on?
I'm happy to move on.
Yeah, cool.
I will call it.
Jamie. Just for anybody who has been following for the last couple of episodes, we're definitely going to be having t-shirts with Jamie. I'm calling it. Made up for us.
On sale in Ghana.
On sale in Ghana. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We might be able to get them manufactured.
So, yeah, we are going to go into a Fight Club.
Ding, ding, ding.
Well, now you want to do a cappella.
Now they want to do it.
It's like the B sharps around here. Or the Whiffen Puffs. Which are their Christmas albums are actually excellent. And the West I know, yeah, and a West Wing reference from you as well.
Oh, wow.
The one with Toby and his dad. That is a great episode,
actually. Whoa. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Oh, Toby's dad episode.
Yeah.
Just ruined
it. It's
superb. Toby's my favourite character because he's a total misanthrope. I love him.
I have to, like, when I used to watch the West Wing, I used to think I was Josh. Now I realise I am Toby.
You're not Josh, you're Toby. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, shit. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Where was my idealism? It's still all completely gone.
That's why you need to watch the West Wing again.
Get it
back. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fantasy Fight Club. Come on in and take a seat in front of our specially constructed imaginary nonagon for another great fight card this evening.
Boom.
Quick rundown of the rules. Each of us pits two fighters against one another. These fighters can be anyone or anything. We then discuss the faults and merits of each fighter and how we think the fight would go. We then all decide on a winner. So, let's get ready to ramble.
Oh, I like it. I like how you mixed that up.
It also cuts off a PJ and Duncan, right? Yeah.
Although you said something earlier. What did you say earlier that reminded me of Frontier Psychiatrist?
Oh, it was probably Frontier, for sure.
Yeah, it was Frontier, the show.
Lie down and on the couch.
Just, I was saying, yeah, what does that mean?
You're a nut! You're as crazy as a coconut!
Yeah.
Now they're all about the acapella.
And our acapella Christmas album will be out in December 2018.
Do you know what? I'd be up for an acapella album called Dance Mega Mix, where we only do dance tunes from the 90s.
Yeah, well, I'm down with that.
Acapella.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Kutch is going to have some editing this week.
Yeah, great content, guys.
So guys, do we want to crack off with... Crack off? Behind the curtain once again, guys. Yeah.
Whacking off on my tools.
Out with your fidget digits.
Yeah, with fidget digits, yeah. Quick game of soggy biscuit, lads. Hey? Quick game's a good game.
As I said to you earlier, what we'll do it as a circle off jerk.
Tools, yeah, too. Very much.
Left-handed... So everybody's doing it.
Yeah, we got any lefties in the room.
Yeah. Stranger.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Basketball would be weird about that.
Yeah. Right. Of course.
Whose fight's the most prepared?
I'm totally winging mine. But I think you could say a lot about mine.
Mark?
All right, I'll go.
Okay, go. Okay.
So, guys, not so much two competitors this week as two franchises.
Oh.
I know what you're thinking, but no. I'm going for movie franchises. Much beloved movie franchises.
Okay. That's
going
to be a difficult
Much beloved for some, but I hold a controversial opinion on one.
Okay.
So here we're going. In the red corner, we've got Back to the Future.
You hate that, so...
And in the blue
this is
corner...
A strong contender.
Indiana Jones.
Oh. So I think Mark thinks that the main character of Back to the Future is called Back to the Future.
I just want
to. I told you it was a franchise.
He's a real cool guy. That Back to the Future.
Well, I think that first of all, they've just announced Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah. So, can I just point? I'm just pointing out some things. We're not going to Crystal Skull.
Oh no! Right. Yes, we are. Yes, we absolutely are.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Okay. And also, I don't hate Back to the Future. I just think it's
probably the only good part in that whole movie is the most stupid part, which is where he because everything's so stupid the whole way through. But when he hides in the fridge, against the nuclear bomb, I was like, oh, okay, that's actually quite an indie thing to do. The rest of that film is awful.
Do you want to know something? Still haven't seen it.
No, never.
Oh, well, I've just described the one cool part to you.
You coming out the cinema and saying, God, no, don't ever watch it.
Oh, that was enough. That's one of the films I've... There's only been about two or three films I've ever thought about walking out of, and that was one of them.
Yeah.
I saw 20 seconds of it, and it was Shia LaBeouf.
Well, that was another
one. Shia LaBeouf.
And he was swinging through some trees on some vines, and I was like, nope. Next one. God.
I have to say, I hadn't been in the middle of an extended period of travel in South America and having fallen out with my girlfriend who I'd been travelling with for a period of time, for like a week long of like not talking
it
to
sounds
each
like
other.
You have a real indie, because he's always like having arguments with the girls he fancies while on exotic adventures.
Did you have a
slightly racist caricature of a Chinese kid helping you out?
Yeah
sweet,
we absolutely did. Hold on to your potatoes, Dr. Jones. But no, the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, if I hadn't been sitting there, where was I? I think I was in Rio, and there was the English language cinema, and I was just sat there, and I was like, I'm going to watch this. This is pish. I absolutely despise this film, but I just didn't really want to go out and talk. So, obviously I don't speak Portuguese, so I couldn't really go and just have a bit of banter with somebody else. Oh. So yeah, it was a bit stuffed. So anyway, I ended up watching it for pretty much that reason. But oh god, that was terrible. But you cannot take that into consideration when there are three magnificent.
Okay,
films.
Why do we do trilogy versus trilogy? Man?
Trilogy versus trilogy. It's got to be.
It's a difficult one. I was only talking about this last night with Kirsty about how like Indiana Jones is one of those series I've not seen Crystal Skull for the reason that I don't want it to ruin one of my favourite favourite trilogies as a kid, but it's strong because I think trilogy wise there's three
and it's almost perfect,
which are almost like the basis of part of who I am today because I watched them so many fucking times.
Is that the reason why you and Kirsty have such an extensive collection of whips?
And a small Chinese boy.
What he does with his fingers. Okay. But yeah, genuinely, I do think, like, I have to say, like, in terms of the trilogies, like, I'm putting myself in the like the eyes of a Back to the Future fan, right? Like, say, I liked it a lot more than I I actually do. Which is the third Back to the Future, the one where he goes back to the Wild West, is pretty weak.
No.
Do we agree?
No. I think that's probably it's between that and the first. I think that's the second best one. Next to the first
definitely.
One.
Yeah. I think the first one is by far and away the best.
Yeah,
the first one, the first one's brilliant.
The first one is a great film.
I like the third one because the third one becomes a proper little adventure film. And I think they managed to tie up that sort of slightly comedic Western sort of side of things.
Yeah, when he goes in and orders the milk and things like that. Clint Eastwood.
And I think it works really well, but it does have a bit of that sort of like, sort of adventure, cowboy adventure feel to it, while still managing to be part of this bigger sort of storyline and franchise, you know, that tells this story of Doc and Martin.
Do you know what annoys me about the Back to the Future trilogy was, you know how these days we get like a trilogy of films and people complain, oh, it should have just been one film or it should have just been two films. It's like Back to the Future did that already because at the end of the second film it had all to be continued and people were like, oh, loving it. I feel like I was tricked in that whole marketing thing, you know, that kind of Spielberg Hollywood way of, oh, you're going to be watching three films, not just two films.
It was like one of the first examples of it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know,
where we're all under, it was like first universe sort of films.
Like The Hobbit and things like that. And thinking back at that, I think that I really don't like that way of.
Don't compare Back to the Future to The Hobbit films. No. They were fucking awful.
Yeah, no, exactly. But.
So, well, I don't. What do you mean that you don't like that? I don't.
Like, I don't like.
Like, it was. Like,
I don't like films being deliberately two films.
And also, I think you're saying it's like a marketing gimmick.
To signpost like to the next.
Yeah, it's such a clearly commercial venture.
Yeah, I didn't really care when I was younger because I didn't really understand it, but now it's becoming more common, and I kind of taints my view of Back to the Future a bit because it's kind of like
it wasn't the weird time travel rules that annoyed you.
I don't mind that sort of thing if it means that they're expanding a story and giving you a bit more of a story and bit more time in that world. Because
it's like
if it's a world that's popular and people do want to see more of it, if they get it right, you do want to spend more time in that world. I mean, look at something like Star Wars. I mean, pretty much, bar the prequels, but even then, you were still in the world of Star Wars, and
that's his main selling point, though, is the world of
the world. I think the final two films were filmed to be two films, though, and I think that's what annoys me. Like, I've not seen The Hobbit for the fact that it's three films.
Do you mean like Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5, filming back to back?
The next Cameron's 25.
Cameron's going crazy. Senile. I don't know. I think there's... He's just sitting in his room in his pants writing Avatar fan fiction.
Just ringing up money, like money.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Oh, I'll write you some more Avatar films. I'll keep doing it. It puts me off Back to the Future for that reason.
This one's easy for me. See, it's Back to the Future 100%. I've always thought since I was a kid, I enjoyed Indiana Jones and I like watching it. And it's something you'd watch on like bank holidays and stuff like that. But I always thought, that it was overrated, especially compared to like Back to the Future.
I think...
That's like the vice versa of my opinion.
I know.
See, Indiana Jones, I enjoy it, but I've not... I watched it a lot as a kid, but as an adult, I've not watched them an awful lot. I haven't gone back to constantly watch them. Back to the Future's on, like if it's on ITV2 or whatever, any of them, it goes on and I'll watch it, and I'll watch it every single time with a big bloody smile on my face.
Although something annoyed me since I was a kid with that film, it's another one of my catchphrases, got a lot of things annoying me since was in the very first film where they first do time travel, and the car goes through and it's got the dog in it. And on one of the shots, it goes in between their legs, the flames from the tires.
Yeah.
And then in the next shot, the tires are like, they're in different places, not between their legs. Drives me fucking nuts.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
I thought I'd deconstructed those films.
No, that's a huge continuity error in the first fucking 15 minutes. It's annoying.
So not the fact that the doc survives an AK like 47. Attack.
I don't care if he gets killed. Well, you think he's killed by an Iranian terrorist. Yeah, that doesn't bother me. No. It's the small continuity errors. Forget the ship time travel rules. It's the continuity errors that really get me.
So is this a dividing line between us and I've never been a big kind of like sci-fi time travel, all that kind of thing. Never really particularly appealed to me. In Back to the Future, I like the kitsch 50s references and things like that. Like playing Johnny B. Goode, things like that. It's like there's some brilliant moments in the first one and things like that. But to me, it's kind of like it kind of felt a bit like more of the same. And in terms of the going back to the Wild West, I mean, to be fair, Red Dwarf did it much better than that. But but whereas what I always watched as a kid was my type of escapism was something that like felt kind of like it wasn't like a space or a time kind of escapism type thing. It was always about traveling to places or something like that. It's like why I absolutely love Tintin.
Yeah.
So for me, like an adventure is like hearing off around the world, like chasing a story or a baddie or trying to retrieve something like that, which is exactly what Indiana Jones obviously is.
Going to Mirror's China.
Exactly. Yeah. Going there, stealing. And actually, interestingly enough, it's like Indiana Jones was based on the explorer Hiram Bingham, who was the first American guy to see Machu Picchu.
Yeah.
As well. So, like, I mean, there's kind of like even a kind of historical grounding, which is obviously like right up my street as well.
Yeah,
so I'm wondering if that's kind of maybe the dividing, like, maybe that's the kind of dividing line.
Like, I never watched any kind of time.
See, yeah, where I love that, all that kind of stuff, because a question, like, I remember questioning things like time travel and, you know, what would it mean if we could and that kind of thing. I suppose that more sci-fi side of things, where I've loved all sort of sci-fi kind of stuff throughout.
I just filtered that out as if it's possible, it's too complicated for me to understand, so I'm bypassing this altogether.
See, whereas I'll sit and try and figure out, like, yeah. So wait, hold on, so they've gone and that's happened there, but.
Have you seen Looper?
I have seen
Looper. I've not seen Looper yet.
Yeah, the time travel in that doesn't make sense if you sit and think about it.
Hey, nothing can beat the time travel in Time Cop.
Same travel.
Same matter cannot exist in the same space.
I still think though I would choose.
There is actually a scientific underpinning for that. It's Pauli's exclusion principle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it was featured in Radio 4 every week. That's why I know about it. Not in our time, but it's yeah. There is a thing for that, but I don't think that you touching hands with someone from you from the future would really count in Pauli's exclusion principle. So yeah.
See, I know technically it
might not be the same matter.
Well, it's not just that. It's that matter never really touches unless it's doing like fusion or something, because it's really just repelling it.
Repelling.
Yeah.
Wow. I know. I realize Jamie's going to say his catchphrase in about 2 seconds time. But I'm just going to quickly say as well on that time travel point as well. Mm-hmm. That I kind of have the same problem with Terminator as well. Like, I don't particularly like the Terminator films either.
That's a fight for another day.
The first two films.
What were you going to say, Beaker? Because I totally interrupted you.
I think even though I don't like the way the Back to the Future was kind of marketed back in those days, I still prefer Back to the Future than Indiana Jones, because I know the story's better. I think the Back to the Future films are actually quite clever.
I think they are quite clever as well.
Yeah, really well shot and really clever. But it's hard because sometimes you just want to watch Indiana Jones because it's
a post-colonial romp.
Yeah. I don't know about post. I think it's a colonial romp.
Yeah.
Well, I'm calling it, guys.
Okay. So, Back to the Future.
I'm going to say Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
And Indiana Jones for me.
There we go.
Well, it's
we're like a boulder of Back to the Future.
Yeah, you are. Which I'm running away from. Yeah.
So, Jamie, got a fight?
Yes. My fight this week is between, in the blue corner, Sonic the Hedgehog. And in the red corner, Mario.
Oh, that's so obvious, but it's
such a cliche.
They are obvious contenders, obvious fighters, and totally.
See, I think most of us, I don't know if you, Penman, but I think the rest of us had a Sega when we were kids, didn't we? Not a Nintendo.
Yeah.
Penman, did you have any?
Didn't have any.
What did Beardy have?
Aye, that's true. Beardy had the Sega.
Yeah, there you go.
So I've always been a bit more biased to Sonic anyway.
Yeah.
But let's pretend it's an actual fight. This isn't franchises. This is a human-sized hedgehog. Let's just make him human-sized.
Yeah.
Versus an Italian plumber who gets mad off his face and mushes.
And as we know from...
In a raccoon suit.
Yeah, he's fucking mental, mate. You don't want to mess with him. He's like, absolutely mental.
If you saw him stoating around the town in his raccoon hat and stuff like that, you'd be like, I'm not talking to that guy. Wow.
So then if I saw a life-size hedgehog with a massive pair of red Lonsdale boxing shoes on, racing shoes,
he's holding a flower and just, like, chucking Molotov cocktails everywhere. He's a fucking madman.
Is Kutch even allowed to actually take part in this? Because we all know that Kutch bought those Sonic Speed books so he could dress like his hero
at
one point in his past.
He jumped on top of a random TV. Exploded, and they were just inside there.
And I lost my feet, so I had to replace them with a pair of Speed boots.
His first poor attempt at Sonic the Hedgehog cosplay.
So I think that...
The second one was when I went for an audition for the Blue Man Group.
So I think on one side you've got someone who's probably a gangster, probably a bit mental, Sonic... Mario, who's going to have
Is that a racist stereotype?
Are you saying he's a gangster?
Oh, no, Italian American.
No. More of it, he's mental. Like, he's a mad Frankie Fraser type. But yeah, I'll bring that in now as well. So to mention it.
He's connected. Mario's connected.
He is. Whereas Sonic is a sort of anthropomorphic hedgehog who can travel very fast, can spin into a ball and go right through you.
Sonic can literally cut you in half.
Yeah.
Just by charging at you.
That's true.
Yeah. I was also going to say, you were saying that Sonic's like human size.
Yeah.
But we know from the latest Mario game, the trailer for the latest Mario game, Mario isn't human size. He's like...
don't. That looks so bad.
What if Mario real life?
He's kind of got like Wee Man syndrome, hasn't he?
That's another reason why he's mental.
Yeah, because Luigi, I think, is probably more
Luigi's tall.
Oh, yeah, we can have a tag team. So we've got Mario and Luigi versus Sonic and Tails.
Bros against bros.
Yeah.
There's no way that Tails and Sonic are related. So I need to talk to you about how this works.
No, they were brothers.
Okay.
Yoshi in the corner of Mario and Luigi, and Knuckles in the corner.
For Sonic and Tails. Yeah. What a tag team.
Because Tails could fly him in.
Well, yeah.
And then just drop him anywhere in the Nonagon. Yeah.
I'm also thinking like whenever.
But he would immediately then commit suicide. Right.
Yeah.
Like in Sonic 2, he would disappear constantly.
Stop flying it! No, you're making it! No. So you go to hit the boss and then Tails hits him, so then you can't hit him and you fly through him.
Yeah.
And then go into the pit and die. Yeah. Fuck you, Tails. Fucking Tails.
Just out of curiosity, a really technical question, but is the Nonagon got a cage over the top of it? Because that really does limit Tails' ability to influence.
No, I don't think there's tail over the tail. Cage over the top.
Wouldn't girls be hot?
I mean, the commission's going to get on to it.
Whoa!
That's out again.
After a fight, the commission's going to get onto him for exiting the cage, especially during the fight.
Yeah.
After a fight, it's bad enough, but during the fight, that's a no-no.
Yeah.
That's a big no-no. So, but you know, he doesn't care about the post-fight consequences. That's what happens in there. But, you know, I mean, the guy's called Miles. You know,
it must be hard.
Yeah. Miles. I don't know if your first name's Knuckles though.
No, that's true.
Miles Prowler.
What?
Miles Prowler. I see Miles what they did Tails. There. That was his second name, was Prowler.
No, it was Per Hour, wasn't it?
No Prowler.
Prowler.
I thought it was Miles Tails Per Hour.
No.
Is it Prowler?
It's Prowler, because it's meant to sound like Miles Per Hour. Miles Prowler.
But it doesn't. It doesn't sound anything like
no.
that. So that's obviously a cross against Sonic and Tails. Whereas Mario and Luigi are very authentic Italian names.
Very authentic.
Shinzo Abe, when they were announcing the Japanese Olympics, he came up dressed like Mario.
Yeah,
Olympics.
Yeah.
And it was like, he's meant to be Italian, but whatever. All right, Shinzo. Just run your economy into the ground a bit more. Play too much Mario.
Are we assuming that Mario's tooled up, though?
Yeah.
Because we've got Mario's not tooled up, then this is a no contest.
He's got his raccoon suit, he's got a fire flower, and he's got a fucking pipe.
He's also...
He's just downed a star.
He's had his mushies.
And a giant mushroom. Yeah, he's had his mushies,
so he's a giant as well.
Yeah.
But if he's downed a star, does that mean Sonic's hit an invincible box?
Sonic's got his speedy shoes.
Right, okay, so if Mario gets his suit, his raccoon suit and his flower and his fireballs, Sonic gets all the Chaos Emeralds and he's just collected 50 rings and he's become Super Sonic.
And now he's Super Sonic.
So fuck you, Mario.
I think I'm going to have to go... Well, I just realised we said we'd do this one quickly. We're talking about it far longer than I meant. So I'm going to call it. And I'm going to go with Sonic the Hedgehog.
I think bog standard tiny little midget Mario versus bog standard no power up Sonic. Sonic could win.
Yeah.
If they're properly tooled up, I think Sonic could still win. Because he becomes Super Sonic.
Okay. Coach?
Yeah, I think that's the same thing as well, because he would just go through Mario.
Yeah.
Mario, and even if Mario had his like invincible star, the speed that Sonic's moving at, it'll fuck up whatever quantum fucking flux is going on there and just fuck Mario up.
Well, I'm calling it slightly differently, lads. I'm going for Mario. Mario's got a blue shell, and no matter how the fuck fast...
So even if he loses...
Sonic is pissing around all over the place. Blue shell absolutely smacks Sonic
in a fight, even if he wins, his hand gets raised by the ref. Mario brings out his blue shell.
smacks him with the blue shell, and then Sonic spends his whole time trying to collect the rest of his rings. And Mario creams him with some kind of flower Molotov cocktail. I'm calling it for fucking Mad Mario.
It's a good shirt, actually. But
Sonic was absolutely obsessed with his jewelry.
He was
constantly fucking about with his
gold rings and gold chains.
Basically, when he's not in the cage or in the Nonagon, he's spending his whole time looking at Elizabeth Duke jewelry and the Argos.
I think you've got a good argument unless Wario comes in and hits him with a steel chair. I love Wario.
So do we still say Sonic?
Actually, I'm going to go with Mario now.
Oh, so that's two for Sonic, two for Mario.
It's a draw.
Tie. Yeah.
Right.
Right, okay. So These are quite related to Fife, actually, mm-hmm. or almost to Fife. So we all knew the new bridge has been built, the Queensferry Crossing. The Queensferry Crossing is almost complete. When did you open again?
It was supposed to be now, then May. I think it's
right,
June.
So we'll say coming soon.
It's not totally far off.
No, it's cool. June. I think. Yeah,
they're starting to put up a lot of little touches to it. It's
looking amazing.
But anyway, and I kind of feel like the Four Road Bridge is kind of getting a bit overlooked. It's kind of like the kind of scummy little brother of the Queensferry Crossing. Yeah, and sort of you've got the Four Road Bridge, railway bridge, just kind of looking on, just thinking, you're going to have to decide, guys. So I'm going Fourth Road Bridge versus Queensferry Crossing.
Yeah. Are you going to make it a triple threat and put the
railway bridge is just like a ref, just like, guys.
Yeah. Can we also stop calling it the Fourth Railway Bridge? It's the Fourth Bridge. The others are the Fourth Road Bridge and the
Queensferry
Crossing.
So we're going with Road Bridge when it was just built, because at the moment it's crumbling. So.
When it was at its best.
It's peak performance.
But I think about Queensferry Crossing, it was the naming of it happened just before Ian Banks died.
Yeah.
And so there was a campaign to get named Ian M. Banks Bridge, or the Ian Banks Bridge. But they went, oh, we've already named it the Queensferry Crossing. It's like, yeah, but Ian's Bank Bridge is so much better.
Yeah.
So much fucking better.
The bridge.
Yeah.
So I'm going to raise a wee point into this, into what is a very nice fight that you've got there. Beaker, ironically, the fact that you are terrified of crossing bridges, famously, that you would never come for a night out if you had to cross a bridge to get there. So
never watched a film with Jeff Bridges in it.
Never.
The later series of Stargate were hard because Bo Bridges was in it. Yeah.
couldn't do it. So
can't stand Kevin Bridges.
Yeah, no, absolutely hates him, doesn't he? Poor man's Billy Connolly. Oh, fuck off, Beaker. So one of the things, like, you're the Fourth Road Bridge and the Queensferry Crossing, right? How much do the Americans wank on about the Golden Gate Bridge, which is basically the Fourth Road Bridge sprayed a bit like burnt orange colour?
When I was younger,
which
I
came sprayed first. Like the Fourth Bridge.
The Fourth Bridge.
When which I was younger, I used to think that was the Fourth Bridge.
The Fourth Bridge must be older than the.
Well, no, I was thinking more the rail bridge in Golden Gate, because the Golden Gate.
No, I think the rail bridge.
I'd say
the not the rail bridge. Sorry. Yeah, road bridge.
Oh, the road bridge will definitely be newer.
I thought so, because the Golden Gate's fairly old.
The Golden Gate Bridge is the older of the two.
Yeah.
It was construction completed in 1937, whilst the Fourth Road Bridge was completed in the 60s.
I think it was
64 or something.
364, something like that. Yeah. No, that makes more sense. But so, yeah, it kind of is a facsimile of...
It is a facsimile of the Golden Gate Bridge, which, to be fair, I mean, like, America's a new country in many respects compared to ours, and if they think of that as a beautiful bridge and things like that, then fair play to them.
Yeah.
I personally think it's a bit wank in comparison.
I remember Sean, a friend of a podcast, Stuart Farkson, told us his friend around Edinburgh, and she was American. And I was like, this is a new town, so this is about 200 years old. 250, however old it is. And he was like, oh, right, okay. He's like, are there any new parts? I was like, well, there's new buildings. And there was like new bits further out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the centre is pretty fucking old everywhere.
Well, again, this is the new town.
But the
bridges, I mean, one of my favourite sort of sights and like just moments of being totally impressed with human engineering and, you know, like the fact that we have what we have, like roads and fucking bridges, is that moment going under the bridge, and when you go under one of the towers on the road bridge, and it's just the sort of the size. I think it's from being a kid as well, size and enormity of it being one of the tallest things, you know, in the area.
I remember walking across it when I was in
and just feeling totally sort of and it's that's always stuck with me, and it's still one of my favourite things. Like, if I've been away when I used to be up in Aberdeen and would come down here, like, going across the bridge would be a moment of just, like, I'm home. And, you know, like, that kind of warm feeling. And it, like I say, it also just kind of gives me a moment of feeling quite small in a big system. And also what we've achieved as a, you know, as a civilization, essentially.
Just, like,
kind of cool.
Briefly saying that, people wanted to rename the bridge Ian Banks Bridge, as I talked about earlier. I remember watching Ian Banks' last ever interview with Kirsty Wark, and she asked him a question, which made complete sense to me when she asked it. She said, do you think growing up and seeing the bridge getting built and all that, because a lot of your sci-fi, the culture novels, have huge mega structures in space, but he goes into huge detail about describing. Do you think that had an influence on you? He goes, oh, I've never thought about it. And, you know, the rail bridge as well, obviously, because I've never thought about it, but probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, an
imposing thing.
Yeah, because he lived in North Queensferry for his whole life.
Yeah.
well, most of his life. Yeah. Yeah. You know, between the two.
Yeah.
And yeah, that made absolute sense to me.
Yeah. Toth Cunsfair is pretty much in the shadow of the two bridges.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
The fourth bridge and the road bridge.
It's either side of the village.
I remember a family friend of ours had a cottage underneath one of the pillars of the fourth bridge. And it was like, in the garden was a pillar of the fourth bridge.
Yeah.
And it was just like, this is over your house.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
just absolutely well, that's, incredible.
There's a path just near there that leads down to a beach. It's really nice, but... That's like, I spent a lot of time a good bit of time as a kid in Queensferry because my dad grew up there when he was younger. So we used to go there and scramble along the rocks and stuff.
That path was excellent for picking brambles.
It was.
Yeah, it was an excellent bramble patch, got to say. Yeah.
But you always pick from above that height so no dogs have pissed
off. Yeah, yeah.
That's the rule.
So the way I look at this fight is like Mortal Kombat. You've got Shang Tsung on his throne, right? Okay, for the fourth bridge, looking on. And then, you know, on either side, you've got the road bridge.
Have you got the Tay Bridge and the Sky Bridge, like, on ropes?
Yes. Trying to get out, like, Sonya and Kano.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We'll go back in Carton and...
Carton Bridge,
That is a shit bridge.
No, actually, I have to say the Concarden Bridge was a modern of engineering.
Yeah.
Like, there is, like, the cogs and things that make the Concarden Bridge. Like, if you actually get inside the machinery of it, that is a phenomenally interesting bridge.
Yeah.
And it was one that used to, I've forgotten what you call it now.
A racing bridge.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Cantlers.
Yeah. That was definitely very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's...
Forgetting about the shitty Concord Bridge for a minute. What were you saying, B?
I was talking about Mortal Kombat.
So, right, they're fighting.
Yeah, so basically they're fighting. I think...
It's a lot of wire.
It's a very wiry fight. They're both very wiry fighters. I think I would probably go with Fourth Road Bridge just for nostalgia reasons, because I'm kind of like Kurtz. Like, I remember walking across there when I was in Cubs, and I walked one side and walked the other. And that was quite an experience, because it was, you know, you're over this huge body of water. You've got this huge structure.
I do have to say, though, the new bridge, it's imposing. It's so big.
Well, yeah.
This is what it's the second tallest structure in Europe at the moment, I think.
This is what I was going to mention.
It's huge.
I think the new bridge will have both the... Well, first of all, the old bridge has experience, but it's obviously slowed down a lot.
Yeah.
But it's got experience in the ring, whereas the new bridge has the height and reach advantage.
You definitely got reach. Yeah, I was about to say
height and reach advantage.
It's quite literally like a bloody peacock. It's got these massive fins that are showing off.
Yeah.
There's another thing about it as well. Like from my walk home, like you could only ever see the top of the fourth road bridge, just the very tops of them where the flashing lights, because you've got the castle and hill in Rosyth, which is sort of in the way of seeing the water, essentially, and the farm at the top of there. Now, the new bridge has totally changed the skyline, because you now can see the tops of all three spires and the tendrils coming down from it. And
you can see it.
And see, yeah, see if,
you can see it from a much further away as well.
Yeah. And see if you were a visitor coming to the area and you didn't know that was the bridge and you were coming through Rosyth, you'd be like, what the fuck has grown out that hill?
I've just thought of a massive problem over Queensferry Crossing, because it's a problem with the Fourth Road Bridge as is. Which is, what's the first thing when you come across to Fife?
Sewage plant.
And that's only going to be even worse with the Queensferry crossing,
because it quite literally goes over the top of it.
Yeah.
Could the wind dynamics throw the smell
there's a bit on the, you know, the road from Inverkeithing to Dalgetty Bay?
Yeah.
There's a bit on that where if you don't, because my mum was Dalgetty Bay, so I know, and if you don't close your thing, then you... Like, say, 6-7 times out of 10, you'll get the reek of the sewage plant.
Oh,
and the sewage plant.
Smell my shite.
Everyone's shite.
Yeah.
Oh! Lovely.
So, I just want to make one final point before I think this might end up getting called, which is, if you think about them, they're both actually kind of rip-off bridges.
Mm-hmm.
If the Fourth Road Bridge the existing one is a rip-off of the Golden Gate Bridge, then the new Queensferry Crossing is a rip-off of the Norman Foster Bridge in France.
Oh, yeah, the huge
Milan Viaduct.
It is a bit, yeah.
So, the two of them kind of look, and that was, I mean, that was incredible.
Whereas the Fourth Bridge was a
rip off of the Golden Gate.
The original bridge.
It's a modern wonder of the world, isn't it?
I used to work in Deep Sea World and used to get architecture students coming in buying things just in the cafe where I worked, just to get a great view to look up. I wanted to tell them, guys, there's a car park just up there for free. Like, that's where everybody who comes to North Queensferry always parks, you know, who knows the area. Yeah. But they were like, oh no, we better go and spend money.
Well, what do you think,
Jamie? Catchphrase?
Oh, I'm calling it. And I'm calling it for the Queensferry crossing.
No, I'm going for the road bridge.
I'm going to go for the road bridge now, but in a couple of months when the new one's open and I've had an opportunity to go across it, I may change my opinion.
I'd just like to say that the new bridge doesn't have a footpath.
No, it doesn't. So
that's crazy.
Only.
But the new, but the fourth road bridge is going to be dedicated to public transport.
Public transport, yeah.
I also think the other thing that they missed a trick on was like a light rail facility or something.
That made sense.
Although there's been talk about a tram potentially happening like, on the road bridge.
Yeah, putting a tram on it or something. Yeah. Traveling on it.
If the tram ever got extended out, because there's been chat about that being extended to Inverkeithen, if it ever happened.
I know that's an if it ever happens. I mean, that would actually kind of make sense in a transport point of view. I mean, actually,
Inverkeithen's a hub for.
Yeah,
for,
to be fair, we probably need transport expert and friend of the pod, Ralph
to come in and tell us whether that's feasible or not.
And Kyle.
Yeah. And Kyle's a transport man as well.
I don't think we have enough microphones in the world to pick up Ralph. His quiet voice. So, yeah, good luck with that, guys.
Yeah. So I didn't get my shout. I'm going to go for the new Queensferry crossing. As a renowned classicist, I know that feels weird for me to say it, but modernism here.
Well, that's fair enough. Well, I think that's a 2-2 again. Jeez, wow.
We'll revisit this once we've driven over the...
Yeah, once the new one's open, I think we should come back to this one because my opinion might change. Well, I've got a fight for you guys. Sit back, be prepared, because it's absolutely stupid. So, everybody's favourite whistleblowing and alleged sex offender, Julian Assange.
Oh, okay.
Versus everybody's favourite camp 80s comedian, Julian Clary.
The Battle of the Julians. Oh my word.
I've got this image of Julian Clary mincing about outside the embassy.
The Ecuadorian embassy.
Yeah, where Assange just kind of looking out through a curtain. So what's he doing?
Well, see, it's like, I could imagine them trading insults and, you know, Assange would be sort of on the lines of, oh, you are shite and I've got a secret about you. I'm going to release that and it will embarrass the hell out of you. And Julian Assange will come out with something like, oh, but you're in the Ecuadorian embassy. It's been a long time since I was in an Ecuadorian's passageway. Something like that. It'd be some horrible camp. I wasn't afraid to come out of an Ecuadorian.
So I'm probably going to call Assange for this because it's very much like the fight a few weeks ago, Dave Rogers one with the Sun.
Why? Because he just stays indoors.
He'd never come out for it. He'd sweat him out.
It's a sound bite.
Well, that's true.
He couldn't even give insults to them online because
it depends on the rules that you're looking at, because, you know, would he win because he didn't leave the embassy, or would Julian Clary win because he's in the nonagon, and if Julian Assange comes out, well, he's going to get arrested. So
yeah, it was very much like that famous Estonia versus Scotland game where the game was abandoned because Estonia just didn't turn up.
maybe Julian Clary could pay off the police for a bit and say, look, just give me 10-15 minutes to have my way. You'll put a bit of innuendo in there as well. Have my way with Julian. And then you can arrest him.
Well, I mean, I did a wee bit of sort of research into their ages. I mean, Julian Clary is 57 and Julian Assange is 45. So there's a wee bit of an age. You know,
but who has more street smarts? Definitely Julian Clary.
Without a doubt. Reach-wise, they're bang on.
Oh, really?
6'2", really? Both of them. Yeah, they're both tall guys.
Well, it's
their height, but, you know, roughly based on that, their range is going to be about the same, I reckon. They're both quite lanky guys, but, yeah. And also both quite, well, from what we understand of Julian Assange and the Ecuadorian embassy, he's not eating much at the moment because they're not feeding him anymore.
Yeah. So he's going to be... what? They're not feeding him anymore?
Well, he's pretty much a house guest that's turned up and is never going to fuck up.
Never left. Yeah. No, there was something that about him just a couple of weeks ago, how it's like they've cut back on the meals that they...
I think they're only giving the bare essentials.
Yeah, because he was getting like without lavish.
Any human rights.
Like what the ambassador would eat.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's just like, yeah, a packet of crisps and a cheese sandwich, you know.
I think he's getting the absolute basics.
Yeah,
Walker's sensations can often be substituted for a healthy breakfast.
That's very true.
I was going to say, they can also be exchanged for sexual favours, but...
That's the rumour.
Something I've heard.
Something I read in the Sunday Herald, actually. Was that 3 out of 5 stars?
3 out of 5 stars, I think, yeah.
I can't remember.
Nobody else will get that, but the person that does, you know who you are.
Yeah. So
making notes for everyone else.
Anyway. So I'm going to go and sort of put my tuppence in here. So I reckon...
Tuppence.
I reckon, right, Julian Cleary is going to have street smarts. He grew up in a tougher time and things like that. Julian Cleary probably didn't have a relatively easy childhood.
How many times do you think Julian Cleary was started on as a kid?
Exactly.
And throughout his life.
Throughout his life, exactly. By Neanderthal.
I think he can handle himself.
Yeah. I think he could probably handle himself. Yeah. Whereas I think that Julian Assange is the sort of cunt that starts something.
And then runs away.
Somebody hold my jacket. Oh no, I'm getting dragged away.
Embassy grounds.
And then goes out later on to try and dox you on the internet. Like, I think Julian Assange is a weedy wee wanker. And I think Julian Cleary would absolutely wreck him.
I think Assange has spent so much time indoors, he's become like when Neo came out of the Matrix. All his muscles have atrophied.
Has atrophied and just can't move.
They could say, why does my spine hurt? You've never used it, Julian.
Yes, yeah. So I can imagine they're all peely-wally, just going, why do my eyes hurt?
Well, I don't want to throw a wild card in here, but Julian Assange potentially has the help from Vladimir Putin.
Oh, that's a great point.
Allegedly,
you could be looking at some polonium-212. Yeah. You'll just say, let's just have a drink first then.
210.
210, sorry, my bad.
So in Assange's car, you've got Russia. And Julian Cleary's corner, you've got
collection of lovely dogs.
And massive put downs.
Yeah.
And a pride march.
Selection of hats.
Yeah.
Right. A small
selection of lycra.
To be fair, Putin does seem terrified by gays.
Well, that's true.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to engage.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there goes Russia, back to the dressing room.
Yeah. Russia's run away because it's a massive homophobe.
Yeah. Can't deal with all the witty put downs from put downs from Julian Cleary.
Right. I'm gonna call this and I'm gonna go for Julian Cleary by a country mile because I want to see, not only would he win in real life, but I want to see Assange get his face pounded. And that wasn't an innuendo verbose, but I just realized that.
What a great fight. Like, Julian Cleary's just waiting to see the Ecuadorian embassy and absolutely pounds him. Absolutely batters the hell out of him.
This is Julian Cleary after a night out. He's had a few tricks.
He's Larry.
Yeah, he's Larry. He's had enough of Assange's bullshit. And he's standing outside the Ecuadorian embassy calling him.
And the whole camp thing just drops and it's just like total lagger line.
He's in a night. He coincidentally is walking past the MC just as Ecuador.
Boy, Assange!
I'm throwing him out. He's like, right, that's it, you're out. And he's like, listen, let's be having you. Mona. He's never seen sunlight for like 14 years.
It's like a vampire. Don't show me light.
It's the middle of the night. He clearly batters him and no one bats an eyelid.
Yeah.
You're calling it for Cleary. I'm saying Cleary, and Cleary panels him within a second.
My hope would be Cleary as well. Yeah,
exactly.
I think he's in the show.
Fight him. I think he just puts fingerprints on his laptop screen, and that's a sign. Greeting.
It would just be entirely camp, witty cynicism, put downs, and that would be
just
enough.
Take him down. Yeah, take him to school.
Just continue, and that would be it. So yeah, cool. That's unanimous. Good. We've had one unanimous fight.
Yeah.
Amazing. But, yeah. Well, I think it's time to move on to our Hall of Famer this week.
And I believe, Kutch, it's you that's up with a Hall of Famer this week.
I do have a Hall of Famer for us. My Hall of Famer today, she is going to be the First Lady. It's the First Lady to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think so, anyway.
Not
so.
Ivanka Trump. That was per quality, but I still loved it.
No, but she shall be the First Lady of the Five Club Hall of Fame, because she quite literally is
the First Lady.
Yeah.
Good.
And also kind of continues on our theme of polymaths from the kingdom. She was born in Jedburgh, but was brought up in Burnt Island.
That's all right.
And like, her mother had connections with Fife as well, so we're going to claim her as a Fifer, one of our own. It's Mary Fairfax Somerville. Known as the Queen of 19th Century Science.
Oh.
She was a Scottish science writer and studied mathematics and astronomy, and was nominated as one of the first female members of the Royal Astronomical Society alongside Caroline Herschel, who was her German counterpart at the time. She was born in 1780 and died at the grand old age of 91 in 1872.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I was not aware of that.
I didn't know that at all.
Huh.
Fuck Jedburgh.
Lovely Abbey.
So yeah, quite an interesting life that she had as well. When John Stuart Mill, the British philosopher and economist, organising the massive petition to Parliament to give women the right to vote, he had Mary put her signature down as the first signature on the petition because she was such an important sort of player at the time, essentially. She was the daughter of a Vice Admiral Sir William George Fairfax, who was the scion of a distinguished family of Fairfaxes, and she was related to several prominent Scottish houses through her mother as well. She grew up in Burnt Island, and when her father first returned from sea when she was at the age of 10, he thought she was a bit of a savage, and sent her to for a year of tuition at Musselburgh, which at the time was an expensive boarding school.
Yeah, really posh back in those days.
Yeah, and when she did return, she was able to read and write, and she could perform simple arithmetic and knew a little French. And from there, she went on to be taught informally elementary geography and astronomy. But she found her education limited compared to what her brothers had come to expect and receive. So to supplement this, her uncle, Thomas Somerville, taught her Latin and kind of really pushed her on as a student. Once listening into her brother receiving tutoring in mathematics, she answered when he couldn't. And this kind of became a theme throughout her life. She would really kind of just be on the ball with a lot of maths and astronomy shit, basically.
What you're trying to say is that when, you know, she's a woman, we wanted to speak up when men were speaking, which is precisely the opposite of Ruth Davidson.
Wow.
There he goes.
Yeah, that was shameful.
Shame.
Yep, shameful. Anyway, but yeah, so, like I say, lots of interesting things. She studied art with Alexander Naismith in Edinburgh, taught her a bit of perspective and inspired her to learn a bit more about that kind of thing. And she picked up a copy of Euclid's Elements of Geometry and taught herself from there. And pretty much from that point, she taught herself a lot of the stuff, and then got to know other
physicists.
Yeah, other scientists and
boffins,
learned from them. In 1812, she married a distant cousin who was a Russian consul, and actually gives me a link to somebody else I'll be doing in the future. The Russian consul, Russian consul in London, Captain Samuel Gregg, who was son of Admiral Samuel Gregg, who was a admiral in the Russian Navy, and was born in Inverkeithen. I will be doing that as my next one, because it's a fascinating story too, and again another strong link to Russia.
Absolutely.
But yeah, just fascinating life. As I say, spent a lot of time dicking about with astronomy and finding meteors and things like that. And just somebody that I kind of thought was about time that we had a decent female.
I absolutely couldn't agree more, Katch.
Yeah, we've had lots of sausage.
We had sausage fest recently. Yeah.
I think we absolutely have, and I think that there's. I mean, certainly. In the ones that I'm thinking of doing in the next period of time, I think there's certainly at least one female who I'm definitely going to suggest, unless one of you buggers necks it first. But yeah, I think I'm a proper like feminist tale. It's it was difficult in that era. The attitude to educating women was wrong, and it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that someone who's managed to find a way around informal education structures and ends up being so influential. Absolutely.
Yeah. And yeah, again, the whole sort of theme of polymaths from Fife as well.
Doesn't it make us seem like fucking underachievers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got a podcast, mate.
Yeah, they have a fucking podcast?
Not for long.
But he had a comb over.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I think let's welcome her into the Hall of Fame.
Yes. And long may it start a tradition of more women.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Says
to feminism.
Yuri Gagarin.
Also, I was thinking that we'd
actually we're say
gonna...
yeast.
That's the Russian ace work.
We are going to have to open up a specialist wing, maybe like Polymath Pit.
Yeah.
Something like that in the Hall of Fame, because there's a fair few of them. I think that's, what, four?
Yeah, absolutely.
Four of the six we've done or something like that. Yeah, it's interesting that there's certainly for a period of time we were punting out some great minds.
Yeah, punting out geniuses and great minds. Yeah, absolutely.
Long may it continue. Just you wait till next week.
Cool. Well, that's kind of bringing us close to a close. I was wanting to say...
You certainly were.
But what I want to do is ask our good listeners out there if anybody would love to come and join us on the podcast and become a guest. We're looking to get a wee list of people together to invite on every couple of weeks. And I'd say bring a bit of new chat in and see where it takes us. So if you are interested, please get in touch and let us know.
Jamie, how would they do that?
Yeah, how would they do that?
They could do it in several different ways. But first and probably best is through Facebook on facebook.com/fiveclubpod or at Five Club, or on Twitter at Five Club. Email us at fiveclubpod@gmail.com and Instagram, Five Club.
Cool.
I feel it's a bit too inclusive. What if Julian Assange wants to get in touch?
Then we'll get Julian Cleary on at the same time. He'll beat the shit out of
him. Yeah, beat the living shit out of him. Yeah.
We'll chant your name.
Yeah. It's called balance.
Yeah. We'll stand in the corner. Yeah, just go, Cleary, Cleary.
I'll take that.
Great.
I'll take that.
Great.
Well, is it that time of the night?
It is.
It's that time of the night where I have to...
Oh, I don't know. Jamie could just call the whole episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
You're calling it now. You're calling it?
Yeah, I've called it.
All right, let's call it. Well, still, I think Beatty needs to give us a wee motto this week.
It's the one fucking thing.
I'll just reread
your motto should be, I will not fidget with fucking box thing when you're recording a podcast.
Give me a second.
Stop rubbing your legs during the podcast.
Okay, how does... this go again.
No!
No!
Good night!
Good night!